Hey, it's Hannah Baba, host of Cross Current. Just a couple of times a year, we ask for your support, and now's the time to do that. Make sure to contribute today to our fall membership campaign. Keep us strong. If you want to contribute, go to kalw.org and click donate. And thank you.
KALW.
All the pain, everything that I'm going through, all the hurt, all the prison, all the crap that I see on a daily basis that I have to go through and that I have to endure is over. I'm done.
After a devastating loss, it can be hard to find a reason to carry on.
It hit me. That's what I need. I need a why. I need a reason. I need a purpose. What the hell am I here for?
Today, helping yourself by helping others. It's a new story from Uncuffed. Then, a photographer takes us inside the world of Black rodeos.
I met so many men who are extremely thoughtful. They get in almost a meditative state before they go on there.
Plus, an ode to the hustling in the Bay Area gig economy. Finding purpose, finding balance, and finding work. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today we start with a new story from Uncuffed, our award-winning series created by people incarcerated in San Quentin and Solano state prisons. William Harris was proud of the close relationship he had with his father. It kept him afloat while he served time in prison. Connecting with his dad gave him purpose. So when his dad passed away, he felt like he lost everything. Uncuffed producer Andre Davis has this story about how William found meaning again by helping others when they were at their lowest. And a warning, this story mentions suicide. Please take care as you listen.
One day I just made a decision that on August the 6th, I think it was, I'll be gone. That's the day that I'll be dead.
Full name is William James Harris Jr., and I've been down for 28 years. My father, I always respected him. Everything about him I respected. It was 2014, the year I found out about my father and his cancer. He never let on how serious the cancer was, but it was serious because he was supposed to take radiation and chemo. So he took radiation. But the radiation knocked him down. I mean, literally knocked him down. So I was talking to my mom one day, and she was like, yeah, he's trying to eat the Jell-O, and he's taking the weed pills or the THC pills or whatever the hell that stuff is. And he's taking that in order to get his appetite back. So I said, well, Mom, how serious is this? Because no one's telling me how serious. She said, okay. She said, well, he's going to die. And I'm like, what do you mean he's going to die? She said, he's going to die. It's metastasized to his brain, to his bladder, to his kidneys. It's everywhere. I was numb. As time went on, and as I thought about it, and as, you know, they had the funeral, and I couldn't talk to him, and, you know, my mom was distant, and, you know, she said, man, I have to leave, and so don't call me for a little while, and so I felt like I lost everything. All the pain, everything that I'm going through, all the hurt, all the prison, all the crap that I see on a daily basis that I have to go through and that I have to endure is over. I'm done. I don't give a damn if somebody says that's the coward's way out or the weak way out. I don't care about them. None of that. I don't care about any of that. They don't live my life. So this is the day that it's going to end. So I wake up in the ambulance. I think it was an ambulance or on the gurney. Because they hadn't started doing CPR yet. But dude is hitting my chest, Harris. And, you know, I have the bruise on my neck and all that kind of stuff. So they make sure my brain activity is still functioning because I didn't get any air for a little while. Then they sent me, I was in the hospital for a night, and they sent me to Stockton crisis bed. So they said, well, we're going to send you to EOP when you get back to Lancaster. So that's where I went. I went to DRDOP. EOP is Enhanced Outpatient Program. And it's for people with mental health issues to make sure that they're monitored well and they can learn how to function properly and go back to the general population. My clinician name was Dr. Agar. I got a sense of what type of clinician she was, what type of person she was, and how much she cared, just on a clinical level, about the patients she had. So it kind of perked me up a little bit. So then the next time I talked to her, the very next day, we were talking about, you know, suicide and how I was depressed and everything. And she said, look, well, can you make me a promise? You know, give me your word on something. And anybody who knows me, my word is my bond. And I said, well, it depends on what you're asking me to do. So she said, give me your word that before you try suicide again, that you will do everything possible to stay alive. A couple more sessions later, I gave her that promise because she showed me, she earned the right for me to give her that because she showed me how much she actually really did care. It's a quote by Friedrich Nietzsche, and it said, he who has a why to live for can bear almost any how. And as I read it, I'm like, ooh, whoa, it hit me. That's what I need. I need a why. I need a reason. I need a purpose. What the hell am I here for? I need a meaning. They put me in a track called DBT, Dialectic Behavioral Therapy. And it has mindfulness, distress tolerance, emotional regulation, and interpersonal relationships. Those are the four prongs of dialectic behavioral therapy that they teach. And especially in distress tolerance, you have something called radical acceptance. I hate that term, but I love the term. And radical acceptance is something, if you've ever heard of it, it's something that you accept the situation that you're in, period. Just accept it. It is what it is. You don't have to like it. You just accept it until you can change it. And that's what radical acceptance, that's the hardest thing for me to do, but that's the thing that I needed the most because I cannot stand being in prison. I hate it, every aspect of it. But I'm here and I'm trying to change it, but I have to accept the fact that I'm still in prison. So that's one of the things that helped me find my purpose, my meaning. In looking for my purpose, I found it. Advocacy for people who may not be able to advocate for themselves. And mentorship, helping young people see certain things that they may not see and may not understand, and letting them have a safe space to go through that. That's my purpose. That's why I was put on this earth. Doing those things is how I get through this time. Also, if it weren't for mental health, if it weren't for the therapy that I received, then I would still be the same individual ready to die, or probably would have already been dead. Understanding mental health and all these types of things, it helped me find my purpose. It helped me find my happiness. In the midst of all this chaos, I can still find happiness and peace.
That was William Harris. His story was produced by Andre Davis in the Uncuffed program at San Quentin State Prison. William continues to give back as a mental health advocate, peer support specialist at San Quentin. If you or a loved one is struggling with suicidal thoughts, you can call or text the crisis hotline 988. If you're incarcerated, you can fill out a form 7362 to get help. We have a link to additional resources at klw.org/crosscurrents. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and listeners like you. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can hear more by going to KALW.org and subscribing to Uncuffed on your podcast player. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area photographer Trisha Turner has shot some major advertising campaigns, but for a long time, she's wanted to capture a group that doesn't get much mainstream attention, Black Cowboys. Trisha traveled around the Western United States for 2 years, taking intimate photographs that celebrate the spirit of this unique culture. KALW's Janae Darden recently spoke with Trisha about her new book, Black Rodeo. Here's Janae.
How did you get interested in Black cowboy culture?
My parents took me to a rodeo when I was about 17 years old, and I was in high school. Went to the California State Fair, and the Bill Pickett Rodeo was happening at the fair. And, you know, as a teenager, I'd never, I'd seen Westerns on TV and things like that before, movies, that kind of thing, and I thought they were great. But I really didn't have any connection to rodeo. And let alone, I hadn't seen any Black cowboys before. And so when the rodeo started, it just was electric for me, seeing these African-American men and women and children, too, out there in the arena, riding bulls, riding bucking broncos, barrel racing. It was really incredible. That gave me a connection to, you know, here's something in our history, our past that I didn't know about. And I wanted to explore that more.
And it seems like people now, we're talking more about diversity in like country culture, country music, Black cowboy culture. Beyonce shook things up when she came out with Cowboy Carter. What are your thoughts on all of that? Just how now there's more of an interest to saying, hey, like Black people have been a part of this for a long time and have been influential in building this type of culture.
We have always been there. That's what it makes me think, that we've always been there, but now it's been made visible through people's interest in Black rodeo and Black cowboys and Black cowboy culture. But also, I think it's wonderful what Beyonce did. You know, it's interesting because I think that people thought at first, oh, Beyonce doing country music. But I think people forget she is from Texas, you know? So that's in her blood. This is everyone's history. During the 19th century, one out of every four cowboys was Black. After the Civil War, you know, you begin that process of settling the frontier, you know, that American West, and there were thousands of Black cowboys who took the opportunity to go out West because there were so many cattle companies, you know, and ranching. Thousands of Black cowboys drove millions of cattle and rode trails and were really significant in the settling of the American West. Surrounding cowboys, and especially the history of the American West, there's both the history and then there's myth. And those, you know, get conflated, but also commingle. It's interesting that we're left out of the African Americans. We're left out of both the history and left out of the myth. I want for people to see that this book was really important to me because I wanted to document this.
So you traveled to Black rodeos in California, Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, the West, the Southwest. Why did you choose those places in particular? Are those only places as far as on the West that have Black rodeos? Were those places popular, or were they the ones who just say, yeah, you can photograph us?
I chose those because they had meaning to me. I really love the American Southwest. Black rodeo is national. You can go across this entire nation and see Black cowboys, not only at, you know, specifically Black rodeos, but standard rodeos as well. You see Black cowboys competing all across the nation. You can go to D.C. And go to a rodeo. You can go to Florida, Alabama, Montana, Oregon. It's amazing how many there are. But I chose these specifically because I have a real connection to the American Southwest. I think there's something about the geography and the landscape that really speaks to me. And our history there.
And then you got shots, real intimate shots, like shots of them like just deep in thought, or just, you know, gazing out at the landscape or the arena where the competition is. Like you just got, I saw some very intimate pictures, which I thought was beautiful, especially because they're of Black men. And to see Black men like that, I thought was really gorgeous.
That was something that really was meaningful to me as well, what you just spoke about. That intimacy, you know, I think that that's something that I was really, that was really surprising for me as well. My ideas about Black masculinity and fatherhood were really challenged with this project. You're going into something that's a very masculine sport, although there are women involved and they get in there too. It is a very masculine sport. And I think I had assumed, you know, unconsciously that there was going to be kind of a more macho aspect that would be present. Mm-hmm. And it was the exact opposite. I met so many men who are extremely thoughtful. Almost, they get almost a meditative state, you know, before they go on there, when they prepare. I was surprised at that. Very quiet. Some of the events, you know, it can be a dangerous sport too. There is a lot of risk and they take that very seriously. And they're not playing around. So they're in a space where they're getting their mind right. For a lot of them, God is very important. Their faith is very important in their life, but also in competing.
I love the images of the fathers and the sons.
That for me was really important. You can see when you go, you can see the generational legacy, you know, that is Black Rodeo. Seeing the fathers and sons really spoke to me. It was really beautiful, especially again, speaking about stereotypes about Black men and fatherhood. And it dismantled those stereotypes that Black fathers aren't present, that they aren't available, you know, to their children. You go to a rodeo and you see that that's not the case. These fathers are so involved.
That was photographer Trisha Turner speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. Trisha's book, Black Rodeo, is out now. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Before we wrap up today's show, we wanted to know, do you have plans for tomorrow evening? If you're still figuring out what to do, you should consider coming down to our downtown San Francisco space at 220 Montgomery. It's our live event space and pop-up studio. We've used it to hold supervisor debates, screened films and documentaries, and highlighted the work of local creatives. And on the final Friday of every month, we've been handing over the mic to you for our free open mic night. We have drinks, food, and plenty of local talent. Here's a recording from one of the performances, an ode to hustling in the Bay Area gig economy, from San Francisco local Marissa Thompson. Here's Marissa with her poem, Bomba 1099.
Three jobs, man, I got three jobs. Money in the brown city. Three jobs, man, I got three jobs. Money on the ground city. Three jobs, man, I got three jobs. Money in the ground city. Drive the Uber, deliver food, or rent your car out, clean the drain spout. What you do today, Task Rabbit? I got three jobs, I got three jobs. Riding in a high-rise elevator, silver dollars trickling down. Met two sisters on their way up to polish brass on a kingpin's ground. They tell me they love food delivery, though all they can afford is Mickey D's. They walk dogs, assemble furniture while they earn their PhDs. 'Cause now there's an app for everybody. If you want, hop on the grind. And bump, your labor's on demand. Bump, bump, get rich, deliver sandwiches. Bump, don't touch the customer's hand. Don't want your ratings to fall behind. Three jobs, man, I got three jobs. Money in the brown city. Drive the Uber, deliver food, or rent your car out, clean the drain spout. What you do today, Task Rabbit. I got three jobs, I got three jobs. Run, don't walk the hills of Babylon. Babylon by the bay, they say. Don't calculate what they don't tell you. $6 for crosstown delivery. At a front door with ribs and poor boys, the blonde lady won't say thanks or goodbye. She ordered out because she loves the soul food. So how come she won't look me in the eye? Doña Linda, I think I see you. Doña Linda, I know what you mean. You were a surgeon in your home country. Then, bump, your license won't go through. Bump, bump, said there's nothing nothing they can do. Bomb, bomb, bomb. So they put on, so you put on some running shoes. And now all they think you do is clean, and they won't let you do that with dignity. Three jobs, man, I got three jobs. Money in the brown city. Drive the Uber, deliver food, or rent your car out, clean the drain spout. What'd you do today, TaskRabbit? I got three jobs. I got three jobs. Become an instant office filer. There's an app for that. Spend the day with three Rottweilers. There's an app for that. And wash a hot rod Lamborghini. There's an app for that. Hot deliver clam linguine. There's an app for that. Drop off someone's keys that they forgot. There's an app for that. A full-time job, except it's not. There's an app for that. There's an app. There's an app. There's an app for that. There's an app. There's an app. There's an app for that. Here in the brown city, tell me, are you down, city? Tell me, are you down, 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 down for the on-the-ground economy? What you gonna do for me? Here in the brown city, I work three jobs. Three jobs, man. And that's just on Tuesdays. Tell me, are you down, 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 down?
That was Marissa Thompson performing her poem Bomba 1099. And if you're interested in attending or even taking the stage, we'll be having another free open mic night tomorrow. That's at 220 Montgomery in downtown San Francisco, and we hope to see you there. And again, tomorrow's open mic night is free, along with most of the get-togethers we hold at our event space. But that doesn't mean hosting them doesn't cost us time and resources. So if you want us to continue offering in-person, fun, informative, and connecting events like that, make a donation. It's our fall membership campaign. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.